Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Ziad Rouag, President and CEO of Biomodics. Welcome, Ziad.
Thank you.
And so what I always like to do before really diving into the main part of the conversation is to let my guests have the opportunity to provide a little bit more of a self-introduction. So the floor is yours.
Great. Well, thank you. So I'm Ziad Rouag. I'm the CEO of Biomodics. I took over the company in 2020, joined initially in a consulting role in 2019. Before coming on to Biomodics, I spent about 20 years of my life in the medical device industry with multiple senior level roles, larger companies as well as startups, primarily in cardiovascular structural heart. So my background is in, of course, biology, economics, health economics, and went to law school, became an attorney, and done a variety of things in the healthcare industry, including multiple startups and acquisitions.
So what first brought you into the healthcare industry then? Because it sounds like, as you said, you had a very long history in it, but also didn't necessarily come into it from a traditional path.
No, actually, not at all. So it's always been kind of a childhood dream in my personal case. I remember when I was 10 or 12 years old, as you recall, in the early 80s, with the when the AIDS virus was isolated, and the Pasteur Institute in France was the center that did that. And being the sort of the health geek that I was, I mean, I was completely fascinated by the idea of taking such a complex problem, solving it, and so on. So from that point on, we had an essay in school at the time, and I was asked, what would be your ideal job, you know, as you grow up, as you become an adult? And I said, look, I'd love to work for the Pasteur Institute or do something in the healthcare field. It's always been something of passion for me, is bringing novel concepts, technology, solutions. It really comes down to solutions to the healthcare industry to improve patients' outcomes. So it goes back until my all the way back to my teens, really.
No, that's very impressive to actually be able to, at some point, be able to fulfill one of the, what's really essentially a childhood dream. Because I feel like it can be so difficult once life starts happening to get to that point.
Yeah, and it's not it wasn't a straight path, of course, like anything else in life. But found my way. I wanted to do something in health, whether it was originally in law or in technology or in pure research and science, and kind of grew my way through different companies, through different businesses, found what I was good at, what I was not good at, and then grew from there.
So kind of with that developmental path, what's your focus right now?
So my personal focus right now is, so I spent, many years running, operational organizations, from clinical, complex clinical trials to regulatory to quality, building effectively operationally smaller companies with novel technology, taking them through the development phase, through the clinic, and then all the way out to acquisitions, right? So I kind of build a certain know-how on how to do things operationally. So for me, the drive now, this is an opportunity for me to actually bring all that knowledge base together at Biomodex and really apply it comprehensively and holistically to the organization. I will also say this particular technology is dear to me in the sense that I've run many trials in my career, worked with very complex technologies, and one of the key issues is, how do you bring a very complex technology and make it easy to use, simple to train on, and adopted by the general physician in your particular specialty? And that is not a simple concept to deal with. Every new technology has a learning curve. Industry struggles with this. Most of the efforts go to R&D and running the clinic. But then once you get a product out or you get acquired, there's scalability, the big question of scalability. And within that particular environment, it is a very, very complex technical and somehow, I would say, sometimes psychological or sociological problem to deal with, to bring physicians a solution that they can learn this new technology, feel comfortable with it, so they can adopt it more and more rapidly. So that's really the interesting part for me when it comes to Biomodics, because I feel like we have a solution here that's very unique that can really help physicians either train or rehearse cases, adopting new technologies from industry that can have a serious impact and down the line.
And in terms of the new technology that you're describing, because you know, I think you just did a great job of kind of teeing up the challenges, as you said, when you're dealing with any form of new technology. But what's the particular solution that or tool that you're looking at and working with right now?
So just to give you a little background on the company, so Biomodex is a French company, and we view ourselves as a digital health company. We're founded in 2015, and it has been a gradual evolution of the business. So the solution today, we bring something called an enhanced 3D solution. I don't speak of 3D printing. I speak in terms of solution, because that's what the market, that's what the physician, the radiologist, the cardiologist want. 3D printing on its own is not a solution. And I think that's one of the big hurdles for the industry. We can 3D print all kinds of things. It doesn't mean you're offering a solution to the physician. What does he do with this 3D printed thing that you're giving him? So really what we do is we have developed a solution for multiple indications based on 3D printing technology, what we call enhanced 3D, which involves not only the 3D aspect of printing with high fidelity a particular object in three dimensions, but also adding to that a number of enhancing elements, such as imaging properties, such as biomechanics, such as fluid dynamics, within a solution, sort of a station system that's easily used, portable, that can work in a cath lab. And that is, to me, let me put it this way. If I had something like what I'm using today at Biomodex, what we've developed 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I can see a number of endovascular technologies that have reached the market much quicker, much faster with less pain. So we offer a very comprehensive technology and a solution that the physician can simply take and use. So we're made up of a couple of components. We have a station. You know, it's a quite small station, actually. Everything has been thought through in terms of size and ease of portability. And we have the cartridges. The cartridges are 3D printed. So the station can be with the sales rep, in the cath lab with the physician at the company, the medtech company. And when they want to order a particular anatomy, all they have to do is upload a CT on a portal. And within less than 5 days, effectively today, we're working on that. We were at 5, and now we're slowly reducing that timeline. We actually deliver to their door the cartridge for that particular patient. And they pop the cartridge into this little station in the cath lab, and then they perform the procedure on that particular patient's anatomy. And so multiple applications, of course, for direct to physician. A physician can actually perform the procedure the morning of or the day before he does an elective case, and then go in with a certain level of confidence, knowing what he's done in that procedure, try to work out some kinks and so on, and doing the actual procedure. For industry, it's becoming an additive to them when they launch new products to train their physicians and start doing a number of early cases with those physicians. And then for R&D organizations, what we're finding is we're having a number of devices more and more bought from us and used, because R&D organizations are able to iterate much faster by using specific anatomies for specific indications. And we are very much into the tailoring process. So we can print any, let's say, neurovascular anatomy that a company that wants to develop a new flow diverter, for example. So they want to treat certain patients. That's fine. What's your portfolio? What are you looking for? We're able to do that and give that to them within a few days. So we have really multiple angles in which this technology is being used today, from physicians to R&D groups. And we expect the technology to be adopted more and more and earlier stages of the development process, early stage feasibility, maybe at some point even start planting animal studies, and then taking it all the way through the life cycle of the technology.
So I'd kind of like to pull that apart a bit, because you know, sure. I think there's a lot that you just laid out there. And kind of, I think starting with the idea itself, you know, as you were saying, you know, it's a 3D solution as opposed to just, you know, a simple 3D printed object. So I guess from the first perspective, it's, you know, kind of what are the challenges from, you know, the technical perspective of basically creating, as you said, from imaging, you know, an exact replica of, you know, a particular identified piece of anatomy and then making it interactive.
Right. So I think the first part, the printing part of a specific anatomy today has been worked through to a large extent. So you need a certain level and type of imaging. In the healthcare industry, it's usually CTs or MRIs. Mainly CTs. MRIs don't have the right resolution necessarily. from a baseline CT, there is today a segmentation software, which allows you to take those slices off of the CT and then literally reconstruct in three dimension the physical anatomy. And then from that particular segmentation, technically, you running it through a CAD file and STL, you can actually end up printing in three dimensions, whether in a single material or multiple materials, depending on what you're looking for, that particular file. So the baseline of printing from CTs to CAD, from STLs to CAD files and so on, that is today something fairly common. You know, this is why you see, you go to Best Buy or Walmart and you see small 3D printers, right? And it's all about creating that particular STL file that you can generate and then print. Where the complexity comes is, okay, great. So I've printed something in a rigid plastic. Now, what do I do with this? If I'm a physician, I can show it to my patient. This is your anatomy. This is your tumor. This is the, but then beyond that, how does a physician use that to rehearse a case or understand how he's going to approach a case? Well, you need something way beyond that. And that's the second stage that everybody's working on today in the industry. So in our particular case, in addition to having that STL file that can be printed in mono material, we add a number of elements. So what's needed for a physician is tissue properties. That polymer needs to represent the behavior of the tissue that he's going to be working on.
Sorry, when you're talking about that, so that, and I suspect you're probably about to get into this, but that's then introducing material for the printing process that is not just, as you said, the rigid plastic that you see, you know, probably at demos of 3D printing in a package store.
Absolutely correct. So you introduce complex biomechanic modeling, and so that material becomes printed in many materials, what we call multi-material printing, and at a very small level, so at a droplet level, where you can combine multiple materials to get certain characteristics, whether it's elasticity, whether it's compression forces, radial forces, and so on. So that's the first element. The second element is many of the procedures going on today rely on significant amount of imaging, whether it's fluoroscopy or ultrasound or ICE technology. So today when you're in a cath lab, you don't perform that procedure without those modalities. It's impossible because you come in with a catheter system. So your models, your 3D printed models, have to be able to replicate when they're being used in the cath lab, those particular views. So we integrate a number of characteristics into polymers to be able to make these materials fluoroscopic, as well as visible under either ICE or traditional ultrasound. So when a physician is using our product, he's sitting in the cath lab, he's watching the screen, he's manipulating his catheters. What he sees on the screen is exactly what he would see in the real case. The fluoroscopy, which is effectively an X-ray, and the ultrasound image if he needs it, if he's using an ultrasound probe. So what we are doing is creating effectively a full-fledged simulation environment for the physician with the physical biomechanical feedback, what we call haptic feedback, and with the visual cues that he normally sees when he's doing the real procedure. And there's a third element to that is what we call flow or fluid dynamics. So vessels are full of blood, there's flow through them. So we have a synthetic version of blood that we have in our stations that flows through these vessels to mimic the density of the blood, the viscosity of the blood, and so on. So a physician gets a complete experience, sensory experience, as he's using this technology. And so he can replicate a case and then go into the actual case and perform it based on the knowledge base that he's getting.
And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Ziad Ruag from Biomodics, and you know, talking about the challenge of creating kind of real to life 3D solutions. And you're just, you know, describing the process of creating what sounds like, you know, kind of synthetic tissue. Hopefully, is an accurate way to describe it.
Lens world, yes, definitely. That's what we achieved. In fact, we meet with different companies, and they say the first question is, what are the biomechanical properties of the tissue that you're trying? So that's where we start from everything. That's correct. Yep.
So once you have that piece, how do you ensure that it is actually, you know, an accurate representation or an accurate kind of simulacrum of, you know, the particular patient or the particular organ that you're being asked to recreate?
Yeah, sure. So there's a number of tests that we run. So there is, first of all, geometry element, which is what we call metrology. So when these cartridges are printed, you're capable of taking measurements off of them against, and then compare those to the original segmentation and 3D reconstruction from the patient. So you can say, okay, in this particular spot, it's X millimeters and it's X millimeters. So you do a correlation analysis of the data set between the measurements that you take off your cartridge versus the original data set that you received for the patient. So that's one component. And then with regards to the biomechanical properties, well, we literally do what people do is in testing tissue, we literally cut samples of our multi-polymer material, and we send it to labs, and there's a number of equipment that are used that will pull, that will compress, that will do all kinds of things. And we get those results, and then we compare them effectively to tissue properties, the actual tissue properties that exists either from literature or from actual samples that we've run. That's how we ensure that we get there. There is always a little bit of margin of error. This is not an exact science yet, but we get pretty close in a number of applications, and we keep working and improving our methodology to add further applications.
You know, I don't know if this is going to go too far afield from the actual application that you're doing, but you know, with the that creation of the system, is it possible to kind of extend the use of it to not just as you were saying the training and the testing, but actual utilization with individuals? Or is that something that requires I'm going to say it's going to absolutely require clinical trials to figure out, because then it starts getting much more into the full medical device realm.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, actually. So we actually today do both. So we develop different cartridges. So if a client comes to us, let's say a med tech comes to us and they have a new product, and they say to us, look, we want you to build us, according to these five patient profiles, a series of cartridges we can pop in your station, because we want to teach our doctors how to use our new catheter system. And we do that, and we develop what we call generic cartridges off real patient images, but they're generic. They have a portfolio of their own, and they use it for training. So that's one modality. The other modality is actually we receive specific patient CTs, and we are asked by the companies to print those, because they're going to actually rehearse the case of that specific patient. So we are actually doing that. And in fact, our goal, we have a training component, but our goal of the long term is to make this technology so generic, so common, that it will be no different than when you're going to do an endovascular procedure, you're doing a CT, you're doing some kind of a simulation. Well, you use our technology to simulate the case before going into the real case. So our really ultimate, our vision is to really change the whole paradigm around case preparation. If you can replicate with a certain level of certainty the anatomy, the biomechanics of a particular patient's anatomy that you'll be treating, why not test it in a lab in a very safe environment before you go and do the real case? So this is our long-term goal. So for us, the idea is to make this a gold standard, and we think we can help improve medicine, outcomes, physicians, as well as patients' satisfaction in terms of what the procedures are like.
And in thinking about kind of that gold standard that you were just describing, if it is possible to make solutions like this so widespread, it certainly seemed to change or could potentially change what's considered the baseline standard of care, which then, it has ramifications both in the direction of not just, prep for individual procedures, but, probably the whole scope of education and training, and then the legal side of it as well, because even with that, you can as we all know, you can never guarantee what's going to happen.
That's correct, and I think this is a long term goal for us. We are beginning some work looking at societies, how we can work with societies, how we generate data. It's all about data at the end of the day, if your product works and delivers what it's supposed to deliver. So we are in the early phases of generating clinical data in single center studies, understanding the limitations and the potential of our technology, before moving on to more complex multi-center studies to understand how we are able to predict or help physicians prepare their cases. So we're being very cautious about what we say. We don't know where our technology is going to go down the line, but today, We know that we have a high level of satisfaction, almost a wow factor from a number of physicians that we use the technology with, because this is pretty much a leapfrog relative to what existed today in terms of preparing them, particularly with regards to case specific, where there was really nothing short of simulation on a screen, digital simulation when you're seeing your procedure and so on, but you're really not doing it on in the cath lab with your catheters, feeling things, thinking things. And it's really about the hands. And if you're dealing with surgeons, interventionalists, it's all about feeling, sensing, and responding. And there's that intangible, tactile feel that's very difficult as a scientific problem to mimic.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. It's, you know, you can do all you want in a virtual setting, but, you know, as you were just describing it, you know, once you're actually doing a procedure or, you know, trying to kind of determine how you want to approach something, especially when you're dealing with the complexity of a human body, having an accurate representation that allows you to maybe trial and error a couple of things before you're actually doing the real thing is going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, we think so. We definitely think so.
So, and I'm also kind of thinking, you know, with all the training that you're talking about, you know, how do you envision, you know, systems like this fitting into the broader scope of medical education? You know, thinking about, you know, medical school and residency, because, you know, it's for medical students from day one, you're in an anatomy lab and you're learning, you know, hands-on exactly what's inside a human body.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the application of technology is multifold. So today, if we look at our business and our business model, we have what we call a B2B kind of model, and we have a B2C model, and they're not mutually exclusive. In fact, we're playing in all of these. From a B2B's perspective, the first adopters of this technology have been the therapeutic medtechs. So the catheter system companies, the implantable companies, and so on. We've also been working with a number of robotic companies that are introducing new robots. So that has its own challenges. How do you get someone who's used to handling a catheter with his own or her hands to connect that catheter to a robot and manipulate a robot with a joystick and get the same results or even more precise results? So there's a whole learning curve there. So the robotic companies are starting to work with us in that particular area. And the third area is really the imaging companies, because they are the ones behind all the imaging and the CTs and so on. And this could be a distinguishing factor from them. Imagine a scenario from an interventionalist, and I have basically a complex case. I can see the CT on the screen, I can rotate and so on. I want to be able to have the option to click a button and order a 3D printed version of that particular model, receive it, put it in the box to pressurize it and so on, and do the case on the model in addition to doing the numerical simulation on the screen and do the case. So those are our three big B2B customers. However, there's also a whole direct to physician category, what we call B2C. So there is teaching hospitals, you know, there's fellowship programs, there is accreditation programs, because once you've trained a surgeon, there's all kinds of accreditations after that. So medical schools, that's an additional area where now we're seeing some level of demand, and we're going to start pushing in those particular areas as well in the future. We're a small company, so we've been very focused on specific areas we want to commercializing. And last year was a transition year for us from a sort of an incubator prototyping company to a full-fledged company this year that is actually commercializing its technology on the market. And so we have these different call points that are somewhat interlinked, interacting with each other and self-feeding. Because once a physician sees your technology, when they are testing a Medtronic product or using a Medtronic product, for example, they can come back later and say, hey, I've got this other case that I want to do. And so the whole thing just self-feeds. And that's what we're beginning to start seeing today.
Yeah, and kind of your description of all that brought another question to mind that probably brings us back a number of steps. It's, you know, when people are interacting with these solutions, you know, kind of what's the, you know, the length of use that you get out of it? You know, like, you know, I imagine if you start cutting into it or doing, you know, any type of procedure, it's not going to heal itself. What is, you know, the scope of use or hands-on use that you see with systems like this?
Yeah, so within our endovascular cartridges that we produce today, it's typically a single use for the cartridge. because you can damage it by using it and so on. For the case specific, it's obviously a single use because we applied to a single patient. So our recommendation is to use it once and then order another one. So one of the issues in 3D printing is, of course, cost of manufacturing, production, and we are working on that. We've done significant cost reductions, and we will keep doing that, and we think we can get to a different level. So in order to grow the market, obviously, these things have to get cheaper. Today, it's an elite environment, but we are starting to see the beginning of a somewhat of a surge in terms of more and more people looking at these technologies for their hospitals, for their companies, and so on. But it is today a single-use device. Theoretically, you may use it more than once if you don't damage.
Yeah, and kind of what you're just saying in terms of you know, seeing a surge of interest and use of the technology, you know, arguably that's you know, an accurate description for any of a number of whole, you know, types of technologies that have been coming onto the market and are actually now starting to see greater uptick as you see refinement and better acceptance and understanding of how the technologies work, which you know, kind of brings me to you know, a final question, because if you can believe it, we're already pretty much at the end of our time.
Wow. But
you know, kind of, how do you continue to, or how do you see the continued development of the use of 3D solutions over the next few years?
So I will speak. Obviously, the market is growing quite fast. I mean, if you talk about the global 3D market, we're now over 10 billion, and it's growing. You know, and the analysts believe that this market could be a $34 billion market by 2024. Within healthcare, a smaller portion, which is about 10% of that market. So within the healthcare environment, I think the technology is evolving very rapidly. I'm very optimistic that the polymers will get better, we'll have different combinations of materials, the machines will get better, the software will get better. So it's a fast-moving environment. It's a bit like software. You know, in the 90s, as you remember, things were growing very fast. What I envisage in healthcare is specific applications and solutions to specific indications. So for a company like us, we have effectively focused in areas where the procedure is complex, there's significant reimbursement and payment in terms of CMS, Medicare, and so on. And the procedure requires significant preparation and imaging, because we think that's the biggest impact that we can have initially. So we structured ourselves around multiple franchises, a neurovascular franchise, a cardiac structural heart franchise, and an endovascular franchise. And we're in the process of generating, because we have effectively core technologies platform-wise, multiple solutions for each one of those franchises, and within each franchise, multiple indications. So I think at the end of the game, as long as the industry is able to develop and provide physicians with a simple to use solution that reflects their need across multiple therapies and indications that they're actually practicing on today, I think the industry would continue growing and evolving.
Yeah, no, it's certainly something to keep an eye on. And you know, as I said, believe it or not, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Ziad Ragg, for a great conversation today.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.